My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello and welcome back to the post-credit pod. Eric Italiano and I continuing our Mando season 2 recap, review, analysis, evaluation, whatever you want to call it. Just a good old conversation between two huge nerds. Before we get into today's episode, The Heiress, we're going to talk a little bit about WandaVision, because this week Disney officially announced that it will be hitting Disney Plus January 15th. Originally, the show was supposed to come after The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Then it was moved to late 2020. Now, officially, no doubt about it, January 15th. Eric, I got to say, I think hardcore MCU fans are going to love this. I think casual, you know, superhero fans may be a little thrown by how weird this upcoming show is. Because I'm one of the diehards, I'm super excited for WandaVision, because this looks as different from anything Marvel's ever done in the last decade or whatever.
Well, Brandon, first of all, let me just say that this is the first time you and I have spoken our brave new world.
What do you mean?
Our brave new democracy.
This is true. This is true. And you and I are both very much aligned in our opinions politically in the recent election.
Shout out to us. Just wanted to squeeze that in there.
I like that.
As you and I talk about a lot on this show, the weirder the MCU is, the better they are for it. This looks, I think the most interesting tidbits from this EW piece that dropped this week were Kevin Feige trying to explain how fans of the MCU are going to receive it and how normal fans are going to. So he said, even if you haven't been keeping up with the MCU so far, in theory, you could still tune in.
There's a reason the Falcon and the Winter Soldier was supposed to launch the Disney Plus empire, because that was like an easier sell, an easier access point. This wasn't necessarily their plan, but yeah, I was going to bring up what Feige said too. You adapt and I'm here for it.
So I bring that up because then he also said, if you've been following along with the MCU so far, and the exact quote was, there will be a wealth of rewards for longtime MCU fans. And now what that tells me is that we could be getting, follow me here, not something Endgame in scale, but whereas Endgame went through MCU moments past, the sort of time-hopping, multiversal nature of this show has me wondering exactly where and when it's going to take place, right? So they've showed us, all right, it's going to take place in the 50s,
We know Vision's dead. We know, so it's post-Infinity War.
What I'm curious about is, he said, A, there will be a wealth of rewards for longtime fans, and B, that it directly ties into Doctor Strange 2. So what that tells me is that the scope of this series is going to be bigger than we previously thought. You know, I'm just picturing in my head a moment where she's zipping through random MCU moments in her mind. So I think it's promising in the sense that not only is the series itself going to be different, right? I mean, it's the first MCU sitcom. But the very nature of Scarlet Witch is going to allow them to branch out further into the MCU in ways that we had previously not thought of.
You know, the quote that you just said from Feige in the Entertainment Weekly piece about fans who have been following along this whole time will have treats. When I read that, I don't know why, but it sparked this idea in my head. What if WandaVision, because it is an alternate reality set series, is actually also the launching pad for Marvel's animated What If series, which is their Elseworlds series that's coming out next year? I was reading that. I'm like, listen, I don't think that's a bridge too far for them to connect those and keep that on the kind of DL throughout all the production as a nifty little, like, hey, there's also this for you guys.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. And that sort of leads into what I'm saying, right? Like, I could very well see a scene where Wanda and Vision are rendered as cartoons. Now, I'm not saying that that's something that is going to happen, but those are the possibilities that this show can take. I think that it's going to be that unrestricted in its creative scope. That's something like that, that you could somehow tie in a cartoon to a live action series. Something like that could happen.
And I mean, look, Marvel recruited the Russo brothers based on their work in Community, the sitcom that was known for breaking form and function and convention, that had stop motion animation episodes, that was totally unafraid to be this kind of gonzo self-referential meta experiment with motifs of cinema. So I think it very much makes sense for WandaVision to be that same type of caliber show with that same type of unrestricted focus, which I love. I mean, compared to like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I have always been more excited for WandaVision. At first, when they first announced it, I was like, well, these are two supporting characters that I don't really care about, that I didn't necessarily love or dislike in the movies. They just, you know, were surrounding characters. But the more we've learned about it, the more we've seen about it, the more they've basically said, this is its own little pocket dimension of weirdness. It is shot to like the top of my hype levels for the Disney Plus Marvel Empire, at least in terms of the ones that are immediately coming up, not necessarily like Moon Knight that's still several years away.
Now, do we know how long this is going to be and in what format they're being dropped? Are they going the Mando route week to week or?
I would bet it's Mando. And I believe in that EW article, they said it's a 6-episode miniseries, which means it could be one and done. It also means it has the, typically miniseries have the option to continue should the powers that be, you know, want to do so.
Now, let's discuss just real quick before we move on, Doctor Strange, who is somebody that we've talked about a lot on this show. Feige said specifically that it ties directly into Doctor Strange 2. Do we think Doctor Strange shows up in this?
Now, this is a topic we have talked about before. I said gut feeling no. Wouldn't be surprised if he's in like a post-credit scene or like literally a 30-second appearance. But my gut reaction, if I have to choose one, is no, he doesn't show up.
Do you think a Spider-Man shows up in this?
No, if Strange isn't showing up, definitely not Spider-Man.
Okay, and then last one. And this is a big, broad one.
What about you? What are you thinking?
Do I think Strange is going to show up at some point? 100%. I don't think you say something like that. And so the theory out there is that Wanda is currently losing her mind, right?
Like, which I love. I think that's great. Like, finally, Marvel's not so rah-rah. It's a little dark.
Well, and as we talked about a few months ago, that this is drawing heavily from House of M, wherein Wanda creates her own reality to cope. I'm not sure who dies in the comics, but in this case it would be creating her own reality to cope with the death of Vision. Now, what that tells me is her reality could start leaking into the real world, and that is where I think somebody like Doctor Strange needs to step in, right?
He needs to plug the leak.
Correct. He may be the one to pop it and be like, Wanda, none of this is real. You are somewhere else right now. Because if you look at sort of their powers and their mystic arts.
Yeah.
He is the only one who could remotely rival her power in that field. So, and this is a total guess, but the way that I see this series unfolding is Wanda's mind slipping further and further as each one goes. And as that happens, the more dangerous she becomes. And then whether it be because she accidentally opens a hole into a new reality and Strange needs to close it, or she steps through that hole and Strange needs to bring her back, I would say that there is hopefully perhaps an entire episode with Strange. Towards the end, though, as you said, like that could be like the climax, right?
My gut says no, just because of their huge plans with Strange for 2 and for Spider-Man, and just, you know, a risk of oversaturating.
But then how? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Your outline, like, that you just made, one, I don't know why Marvel isn't paying us to write some scripts, because that's awesome. And two, as we've seen, the MCU is just blockbuster TV. It's episodic, you know? They lead into each other. It would be cool if WandaVision ends with him and her either plugging the leak or him just like showing up and be like, Wanda, I need to help you. And then Doctor Strange 2 on the big screen opens exactly at that moment. So there's no lapse time. That would be cool, even though I don't necessarily think that's the direction Marvel would go.
Well, that's sort of my point, though. There's got to be some sort of direct mechanism that links the two.
Well, I think what you said about her kind of ripping holes in the fabric of reality, it is the link, even if he doesn't necessarily show up. It's like, we know that this guy's got
to
come.
Who has the power to stop her? Nobody.
Nobody. And she's also...
Vision is dead. So she either needs to, A, save herself, which will probably be the story. Like, she saved herself. Full circle. Congratulations. Or they could do something much cooler, like Strange showing up and be like, yo, Marty, we got to go back.
1.21 gigawatts. So I do think that would be interesting. So yeah, either way, whether or not he shows up, we know plot-wise, it's going to set up elements in Doctor Strange 2. So there will be connections, maybe name drops, maybe, like you said, a full-on Doctor Strange appearance. We don't know. Clearly, though, this is meant to build to a bridge.
Yeah. And that's exciting, right? The fact that there, and we've talked about this a lot, the multiverse is coming, and it seems like it's about to start now. And that is very exciting. That is a new direction that the MCU is going in. And that's something it hasn't done since Guardians 1, maybe, like where it really diverged from its beaten path. So, and Guardians is my favorite MCU film of all time. So the more they're trying new shit out, the better. And this, and if this goes well, right, think about the shows we have coming after Falcon and Soldier, Moon Knight. There is some cool shit coming up. So if they nail this, we are in for a fantastic few years of content.
Listen, I know this is not going to happen. I know it's completely and utterly not going to happen and just like legally can't happen. But I put out a tweet a few weeks ago saying, like, with both Marvel and DC leaning into the multiverse, fuck it, just cast Benedict Cumberbatch as Dr. Fate in DC and have Dr. Strange and Dr. Fate as like two, you know, sides of the same coin, and then we could have the DC Marvel crossover that everybody always wanted.
Look, man,
fuck it, do it.
It sounds crazy now, but is it that crazy?
Yes, legally speaking, yes.
You don't think
like
that in
Sony and Disney sharing Spider-Man,
you don't think that in 10 years 15 years, we get a crossover event, it would make too much sense for them not to. All they'd have to do suck up their pride, and that film would make $2 billion.
I don't think, contractually speaking, they'll ever figure out a middle ground compromise to make that happen. I absolutely want to see it, and I want to see Benedict Cumberbatch play both mystical doctors, but no, I don't think it'll ever.
The dollar is the bottom line, right or wrong?
Yeah, correct.
So,
Daring, man. It is like the Nazis and the Allied powers trying to figure out how to split up territory.
Okay. Still, though.
I mean, that actually might be an inappropriate metaphor, but...
No, it makes sense. It wouldn't surprise me if one day we get that. I just think there's too much dollars to be had.
I think if Avengers Endgame made $2.78 billion, and let's say both Marvel and DC are still at the forefront of pop culture in 10 years, that movie makes $3 billion.
Bruce Wayne and Stark just like chopping it up. All right, we're going way off track here, yeah, but that sounds dope.
That's a pod for another day. Deep, deep fandom dreams.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the Mandalorian.
I don't know what time it is.
See, so Marvel should be paying us for scripts, and Lucasfilm should be paying you for soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's right. Really what we got going on.
That's
so,
right.
Episode 3 of Season 2, The Heiress, The Mandalorian. I think maybe we both talk a little bit about our opinions, and then we can go into the nitty-gritty plot recap. How's that sound, Eric?
Good, because this week, finally, this show got back to being what I love.
Now, I did not love this episode, but I absolutely liked it because there is some thrilling stuff here.
Would you say it's the best of the year so far?
I would say I really enjoyed the season premiere, even though I agree with the overarching narrative that you and I have been pushing, that this show needs to be more serialized and not as episodic standalone. But yeah, I did think episode 1 was so entertaining.
Which is something that, even before we dive into the plot, like even the simple fact of having the first scene literally pick up where the last scene left off, even if you're going to discard the characters in 5 minutes for a new adventure, it still gives the show a feeling of cohesion.
Yes, the connective tissue.
Yeah, that just helps. That feels like you're following a tail and not just sort of spinning a wheel and then dealing with what comes up. At least this way, I feel like I'm getting from point A to point B to point C.
I really, really, really like the idea you just said of spinning the wheel. That may be kind of the perfect summation of our criticisms of Mando's format over two seasons now. Spinning the wheel. That was perfect, Eric.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I will say, though, I wrote my first note for this episode was basically the frog lady gets a second appearance, but Timothy Olyphant can't get any more run. You know, because it's like, you know, if we're choosing between these two side characters, clearly we're going to go with Timothy Olyphant.
For real. But I hope that the frog lady, look, I assume that we're done with her. I'm hoping Cobb Vanth is going to come back at
I think he will. I don't think Timothy Olyphant's showing up for just one episode, even though it's cool.
Yeah, just to show up, steal the entire show, and then leave.
It's like a Keanu Reeves move, you know, for him to show up in like Toy Story 4, Always Be My Maybe. Like, let me just up my cultural cachet and bounce. But okay, so this episode, as we said, it opens with Baby Yoda, Mando, and Frog Lady in the beaten-up Razor Crest, which Eric very eloquently called a hoopty on our post-cred pod Twitter account.
Yeah, it's a hoopty. This thing is right. Just like chugging along, falling apart. It wouldn't shock me if that ship is done by the time they're done this season.
Which is crazy to think that, like, the Razor Crest is one of the coolest designs of Mandalorian, and they're doing their best to put it in the rear view.
Yeah, and just like we talked about how we like when he gets his ass kicked, the ship is the same thing. Yeah. Him coming back to the port and being like, I give you 1,000 credits and this is all you did, and it just still looks like a total piece of shit. Like, that shit cracks me up because it makes Mando, who, as we've pointed out, is like superhero-esque in his power, it brings him back down to earth, right? He sounds just like you and I with our piece of shit car from when we were kids, being like, is this the
best? I still have a piece of shit car. Speak for yourself.
Well, I have no car, so that's...
All right, so there we go. So you and I are both basically still pieces of shit.
Right, so it's just like, this is all I've got? So I really enjoy that.
I will say, this episode was on the verge of pissing me off like the other episodes. And about a quarter of the way through it, it makes the turn, thankfully. So, I mean, this episode, so essentially, long story short, he's limping into this new planet, seems to be mostly populated by Mon Calamari. Razor Crest barely makes a landing. I mean, it's about to hit the pad, it hits the ocean, and they have to fucking fish that thing out like it's an overturned Subaru on the highway.
quick note here, as the ship is going down, they show a quick shot of the eggs and then a quick shot of Baby Yoda. And I thought for the first time we were going to get our first look at the Force, because I thought, oh, perhaps they've played up him eating them nonstop to then learning that they have value and then using the Force to save them as the ship went down. That's not what they did, but...
Just bad writing.
Right.
I like that you are so optimistic, though.
Did you see that quick shot or no?
Yeah, I mean, they've hammered it so many times. I've reached the point where I'm like, this can't be a joke. It has to have more meaning. Like, no, it's simply just bad writing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as hard on it as you are, but please, go ahead.
Yeah, agreed. So after Mando basically is like, hey, fix my ship because it's a busted-ass piece of shit. We know that he delivers the frog lady to her husband. That's a nice, sweet reunion.
That is a good scene. That is a very sweet scene.
Yeah, that was nice. That was sweet. And it's more, you know, listen, they've turned Mando into a bleeding heart, but I'll take it at this point. It's fine. One reason I was annoyed with this episode to start is that he goes to a bar and he's, again, asking people where he can find other Mandalorians. And so 2.25 episodes into an 8-episode season, it's still... Oh, I know someone who knows someone who can get you to someone to somewhere. And he's made zero progress. So that's why I was like, okay, this episode is trending in a bad direction. And then when he goes on this fishing vessel with this species that says, hey, we know where Mandalorians are, and they immediately betray him and basically feed Baby Yoda's pod to a fish.
That scene was, that scene was wild.
It was wild, but I was like, this is more of the same. It's like, this guy's going to betray me, and like more side quests. And I was just so bummed out. But when
he home run swinged Baby Yoda into that tank, I like yelled. I was like, holy shit.
I was expecting something like that.
Oh, okay. See, I was not.
When he was like, here, watch us feed this thing. I'm like, okay, this is a betrayal. Got it. Immediately. So like, I was very much like the first 25% of this episode, I was like, watching and scribbling furious notes. Thankfully, it turns around because the way they save Baby Yoda is more Mandalorians show up, including Bo-Katan, who is a famous character from the animated series, who's played by Katie Sackhoff, who I don't know if you ever watched Battlestar Galactica. So I recently finished it for the first time. Very cool to see her on screen again. She voiced the character in animation too. So that's really cool. And it was just great. Finally, after this kind of elongated opening to season two, we finally meet some other Mandalorians, which has been the only plot construction of season two thus far.
I wish Mando would paint his suit. I liked how they were all blue, right? Like, oh shit, the blue squad's here. Like, he needs to spruce up his look. It's a cold look. It's a classic look. But I would prefer for him to, you know, put a statement on his gear.
Expanding that point completely, I really liked how this episode expanded Mando's worldview, because he now meets Mandalorians that you just pointed out have a different kind of tribe than him, both aesthetically and culturally. They come from a part of Mandalore where their people are completely able to take off their helmets, and it's okay for that to happen. He's kind of stuck in this realm that he was raised in, and he's starting to realize you can honor like the Mandalorian code without being the strictest adherer in the world with no room for interpretation.
As we said last week, the best parts of this show occur in its past and future, and this is that. They're talking about his past and where he's from and his planet and how his subsect was more of an extremist group.
Which is cool. I never even realized that.
So the more they provide details about his past, or again, as we've said, where they're going, again, it provides narrative substance and lore that weighs this show down in a good way. That it gives it a sort of anchor. It anchors it in something more of, hey, this is a fun week-to-week, tune in, we'll have some fun, go-home show. It gives you that context of just how grand in both the sense of size and great the Star Wars world can be. So the more they're doing that, whether it's about Baby Yoda or Mando or Moff Gideon, whoever, tell us more about where they come from, and this show will continue to... It's like roots of tree, right? It will continue to grow and become stronger from the base. And that's the key.
And from that, it also basically paints a better picture of Mandalorian as a character. Because at first, we've talked a lot about how he's kind of going superhero this season. And this brings him back down. At first, he criticizes them, leaves, and isn't willing to compromise because they don't adhere to his view of Mandalorian society. I think that paints him as flawed and making a stupid, short-sighted decision in what has otherwise been a very long, arduous journey. And then he comes back around. I'm like, that is a human reaction to something like that. And when confronted with differences, we're not always immediately accepting at first. So I like that little twist. I'm like, wow, Mando isn't just a perfect superhero. He's also occasionally an idiot who can realize his own mistakes.
One of the things that we've talked a lot about this year is one of the strongest parts about this season so far is how they've expanded Mando as a character. He's talking more. He's leading more. He's being more of a father. He's showing more compassion. He's doing what you just said. He's flawed. So it's kind of not inverse, but bizarre that despite the fact that you say, and I sort of agree, that it's not good writing, they're doing a good job of character development of the main character.
Yeah.
Which is key. And so far, that's been the strongest part of these three episodes. And this had more of that. Him not only like being flawed in the sense of his pride, right? Like he didn't want their help, but him realizing that, like having to take in that what he thought he knew about who he is and where he's from is not the 100% truth. And that's a fucking bomb to take, you know? So, they're doing a great job in making Mando, while his powers seem to be going up, his humanness is still coming down to earth.
Yeah, and I like that. Do you think also from a strategic standpoint, this is also laying the groundwork for him to take his helmet off more, whether it be later this season or just maybe season three, he's like, oh, I don't need to do this anymore.
No, well, I think that's exactly it. Once I saw, because we heard going into this year that he was going to take off the helmet more than he did.
Ooh, take it off. Din Djarin. More. Got some credits on stage.
Exactly. So, and he's a handsome fucking guy. He's their lead star. You got to assume that they want his face on camera. So we heard going in this year that he would be taking it off more. But what that made me think was how? He only took it off last time because he was about to die. So I didn't see a, short of them just throwing the plot out the fucking window and just being like, all right, you're going to come close to death every week. I didn't see how they were going to do that. So as soon as they did this and let him know that, hey, you come from an extremist group, most of us take off our shit, I was like, oh, that's how. So by season three, he may not wear it except when he's in battle.
Which would be great for Pedro Pascal.
Of course, for sure.
Now, what I liked from there is they have a little conversation at this bar about basically where he says, I got a quest to take this guy back to the Jedi. We get some references there, which is important, which we'll talk about when we get to our awards and categories section. And then they say, okay, hey, if you help us take down this like weapons depot on this former Imperial cruise ship, then we will basically introduce you to our Jedi friend. So that's a very simple conversation that has a few universe building elements and that sets up the main crux of this episode. It then leads into what I think is a thrilling air heist. Every time, and we've talked about this before, every time there's some sort of Jason Bourne-esque raid on a compound, like whether that be on the ground, in the ocean, in the sky, it's cool. It's very, very cool. And they do that very well. And here is no different.
And every time he's going after the Empire as well, that's a key theme. Most of these, of when he's been going, like when he went to save the child in episode 3 of season 1 or episode 8, where they were holed up in the bar. When he's fighting again, as we talk about Brandon all the fucking time, I'm getting sick of saying it. When they're on the main story, and guess who popped up in this scene? Our boy Moff. When they're on the main story that has to do with the Empire and what they want with Yoda, that is when it's at its best. Even if it's tangential, right? It wasn't really the main story, but they were still crossing paths with the primary antagonist in some way, shape, or form. And that was what I predicted last week that we'd see, and we got it. And we agreed that if they didn't, it was going to be a fucking problem.
We were going to roast them on this pod.
So credit to both us and them.
I like that. We're a mutually beneficial arrangement here. Basically a subset of what you just said. I have written in my notes for this episode, there's something elementally pleasing about watching stormtroopers get ass kicked.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the bottom line, Brandon. When Star Wars, when it is leaning into its, not Star Warsiness, but when it's giving you as much lore as possible and not throwing these random monsters at you that have no name, no face, and are just there to be killed, and when it's actually connected to the greater lore of this world, this show fucking rips. It rips.
We need overarching narratives to take precedent over side quests. And
now we've been getting flamed sort of for not getting flamed, but I've gotten tweets saying that like, we just don't get it. This is how old shows were. This is what this show is trying to be. Of course they want to stretch it out as long as they can. Is the fault on us for becoming too expectant of the golden age of TV and trying to slap that format on a show that simply is not trying to be that?
I respectfully don't think so, because as we pointed out, I believe it was the last pod, there are great contemporary shows such as The Americans and others that we mentioned that changed formats through their run to improve quality and better reflect a more thematic, larger scale narrative. And I understand that that's not what The Mandalorian is built to be, but just because it's doing what it was meant to be doing in the mind of Jon Favreau doesn't mean it's upper tier television. And I think it can be. So I don't think we're at fault for pushing it in a direction that we think makes it better.
Fair.
Now, I think the actual raid was not only great, but also like funny. They are basically trying to get into the bridge, the cockpit, and they're walled off by a handful of stormtroopers in a small, narrow hallway. And Mando's just like, I got this. And his whole strategy is like, let me run at them, take as many blasters as I can get.
Leroy Jenkins. You know what that's?
Yeah. Exactly. So that was great. And then we will get to the most important elements in a second. But I also want to point out, one, it's funny that Titus Welliver, a very, very popular character actor who's been around in a million things, plays the captain of this doomed star trip. I think it's funny that
he's from Lost. That's our boy from Lost.
He's from Lost. He's from Bosch. He was in Deadwood. He's been in a million things. He's been in Gone Baby Gone. You know, he's a very good character, actually.
The Town. Yeah, this guy. Yeah.
I love how when he realizes, when Moff Gideon tells him, hey, we're not coming to rescue you. You know what to do. He kills the pilots and begins to down the starship. He's going to crash it and kill everyone. They break into the cockpit. They stop him. And then Bo-Katan's like, I'll let you live if you tell me where the Darksaber is. Girl, he was just trying to kill himself. I don't think that threat holds any weight whatsoever. Like, read the room.
Seriously. And then the way that he offs himself was pretty wild. Like the Star Wars version of a cyanide pill. Sweet. Just like a cool little tidbit there. I love that.
A cool twist on like an Earth trope.
Right.
But it is funny because, like, I Titus Welliver, I'm like, hey, this guy should stick around. But, like, you know, I bet that was appealing to him because he is kind of an eccentric character actor.
My one main note for the scene was I just wrote, a squad of Mandos is just dope.
Yeah. Like, I mean, now we've seen it in two seasons, different battles where there was more than one Mando just ripping it.
Yeah, they steamroll people. It's really fun to watch. The fight scenes are cool. You could understand why they brought in someone like Sasha Banks, who is an athletic person, and Gina Carano to like somebody that could make these fight scenes look as fluid as they do.
They are mid-2010s Golden State Warriors, a group of Mandos.
Right. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Dynasty.
Perfect.
Now, the most important part of this whole episode and this really cool action scene is that, like we just mentioned, Titus Welliver's captain radios Moff Gideon. Finally, he shows up in episode 3 of 8 seasons. He's supposed to be the overarching big bad. And we get a little bit more. Now, obviously, we knew he was former Imperial. Clearly, based on what he says, long live the Empire. They are trying to resurrect, revive, and or possibly even join Palpatine in the unknown regions if they know about him. But they're still living under that Imperial creed 5 years later after the fall. So that was a little bit nice to know. When we saw Werner Herzog in season 1, that was more of like a ragtag squad of former Imperials. This, with a weapons cache on a huge Star Destroyer, clearly they have a little bit more muscle than I might have realized. You know, the remnants, which maybe become the First Order in a few years, they're not to be ignored.
I think this is the first time that we've seen the Empire in the way that we know them, with their giant gleaming ships stocked on weapons, stocked on soldiers. So, yeah.
I also have written here, this is not important whatsoever, but Titus Welliver's like captain patches on his like lapel or his breastplate, they looked like they were just packets of medicine, like pills that someone just pasted on a like pastel kind of coat. Yeah. I just thought that was a funny design. That's not important to anything. All right, let's move on to our awards and categories now that we've kind of run through the plot. Your first category, which you dominate, and I love this, the kill count, because I don't keep track. I love
this
that
one
you
was
did.
Too high. This one was too high. They're killing troopers left and right. I should go back and watch, and I'll put it out in the tweet, but if I had to guess, I don't know, man, 15 or 20 this week, which is, it is the highest of the week, the year by far.
And like if that. We're counting all the people on the ship too, the Mon Cal, or not the Mon Calamari ship, but the, you know, Alaskan King Crab in space ship.
Right,
know, they
exactly.
Killed another 20 right there. Something
yeah,
like
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
This one was hot. Okay. Trip to the Jedi temple to discuss any references to the Jedi, the Force, lightsabers. Finally, we got a little meat and potatoes here. He says he's been quested to return Baby Yoda to the Jedi, which is interesting because it's not the same as what we saw in the trailers, which was return him to his own kind. So there's kind of this delineation, or it is knowledge that all of Baby Yoda's species are Force sensitive, every single one of them. That could be this kind of miscommunication that's going on. And that would be interesting too. That would make them the most powerful species in the galaxy.
Well, and I think that this is the first time we've heard him name check them. Just say it.
Jedi. Yeah.
So he's definitely closer to learning. But once again, he seems to have the least knowledge of everyone around him about Jedi, which I find odd because he is a galaxy-trotting character. So again, not the best writing, but still.
You got to hand wave that. And like, I understand... Again, that the Empire basically wiped out all trace of the Jedi, and they're not mentioned, and there's a propaganda campaign, but come on. You know, everyone around him seems to know.
Like, I know I know a guy here and there. It's just like, how? Yeah. All right.
Now, more specifically, trip to the Jedi Temple, they name drop Ahsoka Tano. Now, I know you don't watch the animated Star Wars material, but this is like saying a few years ago, you know what? We're going to bring Allen Iverson back. Like, it's a big deal. This is a very, very big deal because she is a phenomenal character. She's this unbelievable, cool badass who has ties to the Jedi, ties to the Sith, ties to the rebellion that was in the original trilogy. So the fact that we're finally getting her played by Rosario Dawson is going to be great. Rumors, like we discussed with Skylar Schuller, who is the editor-in-chief of the Diz Insider, rumors are that she will only be in one episode, but probably get her own spinoff show. I'm fine with that as long as this next episode slaps. Like, her introduction needs to live up to the hype that her character demands and that the excitement that fans have, because you're talking about someone who's been around for a decade. So yeah, Ahsoka Tano, big deal, needs to live up to hype, and very cool because, again, you don't know, but Bo-Katan and Ahsoka Tano have crossed paths many times in the animation. They really do have a relationship, and that's cool to see paid off a little bit in live action.
You think that she's going to show up next week?
I hope so. Episode 4 makes sense. You don't think that makes sense?
No, I think that they should... If she shows up, I want to see her use the saber, period, the end, right? Like, I don't, like...
And we forgot to mention in our little plot recap, Bo-Katan is looking for the darksaber from Moff Gideon.
She name checks it, yeah.
Yeah, it is a Mandalorian artifact usually given to the leader of that planet / colony or whatever they call themselves. So it's a very important symbol for them.
So if she's showing up, I want it to be at the end. I want it to be ass-saving. I want her to pop up and just, and you know, like, make it the way that you speak about her with such reverence makes me want her intro to be as epic as possible. And doing that halfway through the year when she only shows up once doesn't sound like the sort of intro that it seems this character deserves. So
what
I would
it's a continuation of this now serialized mid-season focus, and it really kind of thrusts the second half of the season. Would that change your mind?
But so,
like,
but
episode 4 picks up right after he meets up with her. They clash with Moff Gideon, barely get away with their lives. Bleah.
So you're saying, okay, that's different. If they do the clash next week, I just want to see her do something except show up. That's sort of it. I want to see her in the game being a Jedi. Like, dude, this is going to be different, right? Like, these aren't the films. This Jedi, this take on Jedi is going to be, I assume, very different than what we've seen so far.
And she's a gray Jedi, too. So she, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen the shows, but basically she is framed for a crime she didn't commit. And this is in the animation. And the Jedi Order, like, doesn't really have her back. And then they find out, like, oh, she didn't do it. And they're like, ah, we're sorry. And she's kind of pissed because they didn't have her back. So she leaves the Jedi Order, never comes back. So she is a fully trained badass who kind of is in the middle more so.
Yeah. So
in terms of skills, I listen, don't quote me on this because I'm not like the actual Lucasfilm director, but I would put her like one rung below Obi-Wan in terms of power.
So you're just pretty much laying out the case why when she does pop up, it needs to be as epic as possible. The stakes need to be as high as they can be. And so that to me sounds like a season ending type thing. I mean, you think that they're just going to drop that? The biggest reveal that we know of, the biggest ace in their hole halfway through? I just don't see it.
But my thing is, I don't see them spending, at least I hope not, spending the next four episodes where he's now just looking for Ahsoka. He spent three episodes looking for Mandalorians. Now he's just being side quest. Hey, I found her. Like, yeah, well, that's going to be boring.
Well, we've seen him be quested before, so I wouldn't put it past the show. Like, you're making it sound like it's going to be easy to get there, which is never the case.
And it shouldn't be because, you know, she's probably still in relative hiding.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. What about the Baby Yoda aw or holy shit moment of the week?
All right. So mine is when he gets attacked by his soup.
That was mine as well.
Yeah. When that thing pops out and gets on his, I mean, that shit's funny. And I will give them this. They were leaning on the Baby Yoda thing a little too much for my taste these past few weeks, but they scaled it back this week. Used it a lot less, and when they do, it works that much better.
Yeah, you know, he's so adorable that he papers over a lot of flaws in this show. Just don't make that your whole crux and you're golden.
Yeah,
just like regular babies. Like, if your friend shows you a picture of their baby, like, wow, it's a really cute baby. If they do it every time you see them, you're like, all right, take it down. Yeah,
exactly, perfect.
You know, like, it's a good baby, but come on. All right, use the Force, the best action fight moment of the episode. I mean, them jetpacking onto a moving starship, going corridor by corridor. The captain realizing when his subordinate says, we've got him locked off in the control room. He's like, what? And then everybody outside the control room gets sucked out of the open door for the ship. That was so cool.
Yep.
And Bryce Dallas Howard directed this episode. She directed the episode last year about the village, which you and I didn't like, but in which the action was impressive.
Yeah. I prefer something like this than them fighting a gigantic sandworm every day of the week. Yeah.
I still like the sandworm because that was just really cool. But this, I still much rather, you know, human v. human.
Yep.
Wikipedia, anything that needs a kind of further explanation in terms of these deep cut nerdiness. I think we got it with
Saber,
Jedi, the Darksaber, Mon Calamari. I'm sure maybe there's references that like eagle-eyed fans have picked up on that maybe we missed because, you know, we just watched it at 7 a.m. and are talking about it 10 seconds later. But I think we got all of them.
Yep.
All right. This is the way we think things are going to go. Predictions for next week's episode. I guess I'm kind of half on record now as saying I hope Ahsoka shows up next week. Should I just stick to that and go whole hog with it?
I think you have to.
At this point, right, I feel like I'm in deep. Even though I might be wrong, I'm going to say Ahsoka shows up next week. Rosario Dawson's live-action premiere as Ahsoka Tano.
That's a big one.
You heard it here first, even though you definitely didn't, because everyone's probably saying similar things.
Okay, I'm going to go with we're not going to get that, but we are going to get more Moth, perhaps in-person Moth, which would be great. Give me more of that.
I would love a threatening conversation. You know, I love those antagonists.
Show me where the fuck he is. Please.
And also, I would not mind if sometime later in this season they do start making First Order allusions.
Well, how far off are we from that point in time?
This is 5 years after Return of the Jedi, and which means it's 25 years until Force Awakens. So for an intergalactic totalitarian system to arise, you would think, you know, it's coming. Right? Like, this. Why isn't Moff Gideon being like, we need to build something new instead of long?
Well, based on my knowledge of how to launch a fascist space fleet.
Which is unparalleled knowledge.
Yes, I'd say you're looking at least 12 to 15 years to really get things off the ground, hire people.
So like have official letterhead.
Yeah, there's a lot of work. Branding.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe the conversation.
A bunch of guys had to sit down in a room. All right, fellas, we need a new name.
Yeah. Empire 2.0. Like, no, Chuck, that's stupid. Shut up.
Sorry, guys.
It's like Mad Men, but in space. Yeah. What if
I would watch that show?
What if Order, but it's the first one?
You give this guy a raise. We're going to give you share price in Empire Palpatine Draper Price. I like that, Eric. See, they need to hire us.
Yeah, it's coming.
Sooner or later. Anything else you want to say before we log off until next week?
This was a big one. The show, for me, had to get back on track this week or I was going to be worried. Really, really worried. Not for the show, but for me and how much I am going to enjoy the show, which I previously hyped up more than most. You know, this is a Star Wars thing that I enjoy very much. And as I said 10,000 times, and when they are A, leading us on the main plot, or B, giving us facts about their past, that's when this show is at its best. And we got both of that this week, finally.
Yeah, this was a little bit of a do or die episode of The Mandalorian for both of us. Maybe not so much for the greater Star Wars fandom. I think we're a little bit harsher, but rightfully so. So to see them deliver a solid episode that built out some of the bigger pieces we wanted to think about, that was a much needed win.
Yep.
All right. Well, until next week, you guys, follow us on Twitter @PostCredPod for all your Star Wars memes, analysis, and random bullshit.
And leave us a review, please. 5 stars.
Yes. Apple. Thank you. Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff.
Thank you, folks. All right, y'all. Peace.
Yeah.
I'm going to make him an offer, guys.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.